Media release of Halloween on VHS.
Yes.
You know, that I had three copies of them. I'm like, this is ridiculous. I don't need three copies.
You know,
so just sell one.
Well, here's the thing, and not that I'm restricted anyway, because I have a cool wife and you know, whatever. But I have to mentally justify buying collectibles that are over a certain price.
Oh, and yeah.
Generally, that certain price is, when it gets over 50, 60 bucks, I really have, like, 25, 30, I can see it and want it and grab it, and I don't think. But at about 50, 60 bucks, I start having that back and forth. Like, do I really need it? Is it really worth it? Can I find it cheaper? You know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I think everybody does that. They all have their threshold. It might be $500. Yeah. It might be $1,000.
Yeah, there's a certain point.
But, you know, for me, it's just kind of like, you know. But because we had the vacation, we had my kids' summer camps to pay for, all this stuff. It was in Vinyl Edge a couple, you know, week before last. They had a pretty sweet copy of Disintegration on vinyl, like first press. All clean and nice for $100. And I was like,
we talked about that last week.
And I was like, but it's just very hard for me to justify $100 right now when I'm literally going home to pack the car.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like some random Thursday where you're like, hey, honey, you know, gosh darn it. You know, it's like, ugh. So I'm like, okay, let me clear some of this out, give myself a bigger fun money reserve. And make some room, because I don't want to have that. I mean, I'm not crying about it, but it was certainly one where I was like, man, I should just have a stash of sold cash that I could just throw down at any moment without even thinking about it, you know?
This coming Sunday, you're setting up at the...
Is it this?
It's the second, week after.
Week after. You're setting up at that one, right? Mm-hmm. Are you doing that so you can just maybe get some money for something like a Disintegration album? You want to put it back into something?
Well, I'm doing it mostly a lot just to clear out space. Oh, yeah. I've got a lot of collectibles that I definitely wanted when I bought them. Had them displayed in a round, but then they fell to something else that I got later. And then I realized, like, they've been living in a box for however long.
I do that all the time.
You know, it's like, and so that's pretty much it. It's like, okay, I've got all this stuff that, you know, I've been playing the eBay game, but eBay drives me nuts because, you know, you got a postage and all of that. Yeah. Facebook Marketplace, you have to go strapped everywhere I go, even
for
like,
the
cheapest thing. Yeah. And I'm just like, okay, set up a collector showcase. I'll clear off at least the best stuff. I'll see what everybody wants and maybe make a little bit of money off of it. And then I'll find other people who might be interested in buying.
Yeah.
You know, because I only have probably like 3 or 4 totes worth of stuff. Yeah. We're not talking an inventory. It's miscellaneous stuff that's just kind of collected. So.
Yeah, those shows are good for that. I've seen guys do that, and they'll be like down, they'll sell a lot of stuff because they're trying to clear it out. And they'll be down to like maybe a tote's worth left, and they've made more money than they were expecting to. And they're just like, you want to buy the rest of my table? You know, give me like $50 or $100. You can have everything. Really? And so another vendor will just buy it all. It's inventory for them. Hey, you know what? I made more than I wanted, and now I'm...
Yeah, now you're clear.
And that's what's cool about this show for listeners that are in the Houston area. That's going to be happening July 2nd, 4th of July weekend. Collector Showcase, put on by some friends of ours. If I'm not mistaken, the tables are free.
Yeah.
So you get a lot of people that normally don't vend at shows that will be vended at that one. So if you get a chance to check it out, look it up. Oh, it's on Facebook.
It's a Houston Collector Showcase.
Houston Collector Showcase. I'm actually probably going to be able to make it to this one, so I don't think I have anything going on at work. So.
Yeah. Well, hey, with that, a little intro plug for a local show, but welcome to episode 180 of the Scary Dad Podcast, in which we will be discussing horror at sea. By the time you hear this, because right now it's that Schrodinger's cat thing, the people in that little boat are either alive or they're dead. as of 4 a.m. Central Time tomorrow, so 5 a.m. Atlantic, they are dead if they haven't been found, because they've got enough air to last them until 4 a.m. Eastern.
Yes.
Which is a horrible death sentence if you were just going to go essentially what's a museum tour. I mean, it's much bigger than that, obviously. Yeah. But, you know, none of them were wanting to get crushed by the cold Atlantic.
And ironically, it's called the Titan.
Yeah. So, like I said, we're going to discuss Horror at Sea, of which it's very topical. And by, like I said, by the time this one comes out, it's Monday morning, you'll know. You'll know. We don't know yet. So, I'm going to introduce Mr. Gomez.
First, the old business.
All right, old business. Okay, so when Scott was like, hey, what should we talk about? Between last week's episode talking about body horror, but the current shark attack thing that was going on in Egypt, then our episode before that talking about shark attacks, the episode before that talking about summer blockbusters, in which Jaws is the first. We got a little running theme here, so we're going ahead and sticking with Horror at Sea. But it just so happens that whenever I looked up the old business, and I was like, okay, so what was the movie that you'd see? What was like the number one movie the summer 50 years ago, June of 1973? The Poseidon Adventure. Son of a bitch. We're going to be talking about that one here in a bit. So, yeah, so in June of 1973, you were going to go to the movies. You would have seen Poseidon Adventure. You might, if it was, because it was a limited release, you might have seen Fists of Fury, which is the first starring Bruce Lee.
Lee, yeah.
And you would have been able to see High Plains Drifter. Clint Eastwood.
There's
quite a few other movies out at the time, but nothing we'd want to talk about here. Those are the kind of stuff your mom watches whenever your dad's taking a nap.
Movie based on a Beastie Boys song.
In music, and this is very apropos, 1973, June 26th, the number one song was Show Me Your New Tattoo. Frankenstein by the Edgar Winter Group.
I thought about using that one for the Instagram reel I made, but it just so happened when we were doing the tattoo yesterday, they were playing Rob Zombie's greatest hits. So I said, Rob Zombie has that Jesus Frankenstein, so I'll throw that one up there.
Yeah, that's the only really cool one that's on there. There's going to be My Love by Paul McCartney. And Daniel by Elton John. So after Frankenstein, things got a little mellow.
Yeah, no shit. A lot of weed back then.
All right. I know Scott will want to weigh in on some of these, but your TV, what you're going to watch on TV that week of June 1973, your top TV shows in no specific order, because they never give them to me, because it's a mix between sitcoms and dramas. But All in the Family.
Excellent show. God, we were talking about that the other day with messages about that show.
Mary Tyler Moore Show.
Yeah, it was all right. I remember watching it, of course. It was
The Lucy Show.
Which groundbreaking and just an incredible, incredible woman. She's just amazing.
I was going to say, she just owned pretty much that entire... She was responsible for getting Star Trek.
Yeah, I was about to say, you would have Star Trek if it wasn't for Lucy.
She was just awesome. Then, of course, the Brady Bunch, which we're trying to expose the kids to, like, some old pop cultures. So it's not just all Blinky and whatever else is on TikTok these days. Like, here, it's the Brady Bunch. And the kids were all into it, and my wife and I are both like, this is annoying as shit. I got all the feel-good nostalgia stuff. All right, let's move on. $6 Million Man.
Very nice.
That
was the shit back in the day. God, the toys that came out from that show.
There's some $6 million men walking around now with just some hip replacements.
Is that Lee Majors?
Yeah.
Lee Majors. Yeah. Wow.
All right, you would have seen MASH.
Oh, yeah.
Sanford and Son.
Just iconic.
We always share stuff about that show.
I can't believe how young he was.
Red Fox?
Yeah, he was in his 30s or something when he's doing Sanford.
Yeah, we're talking about Wilford Brimley.
Wilford Brimley. Wilford Brimley, when he filmed The Thing, was a year younger than I am now. He looked about 70 in that movie. But
wow.
People aged a little different back then. I got diabetes. I don't know what that means for how I'm going to start getting going, but...
There was some meme I saw the other day. It was a teacher in class asking the class, you know, so-and-so has 30 candy bars, and he gives so-and-so 25. What does so-and-so have? And there's a kid raising his hand, and he has Wilford Brimley's face. It's like diabetes.
Did I mention Soul Train? I don't remember you used to watch it.
I had a Soul Train shirt on. You didn't realize last week I had a Soul Train shirt on.
Oh, I didn't.
Yeah, know. It was a Soul Train shirt. It was love, peace, and soul. People all over the world.
Dude, the internet is a crazy place. Have you seen the thing? It's true, though. It's like, check out this motherfucker Michael Jackson wearing a white jacket over a hoodie. And you look at him, he's wearing like an Adidas on the Thriller cover. He's wearing like an Adidas hoodie. With a white jacket over it. It's like, dude, it was Michael Jackson. You expect him, he's wearing a suit.
Yeah.
Just, you didn't look that close. When you look that close, you're like...
Really?
Like, he was not even couldn't be bothered. Come right over here, we're going to film the... We're going to take a picture of the album cover. All right, I'm just going to leave my shirt on, right? It looks okay, right?
I know, just for me, Soul Train was just huge when I was a kid, man. I mean, every party you had the Soul Train lineup that you would do, where all family would just get around and dance together and stuff. Soul Train was huge for me when I was a kid. And what pisses me off is, I watch it now, and I kind of realized it when I was young, but now it just looks terrible. But everybody lip-synced on that show. There was no, like, live playing. And they would fade the music out before the song was over. So they would be up there still singing, but no words were actually coming out. It looks terrible
now. The early British shows with, you know, like all those acts from, you know, England were the same way. They all were lip syncing and it would fade out and they were still
singing. Yes, they were performing
their instruments. And, yeah, that's pretty funny.
Well, you have to think, though, if you're TV, and this is not, it's got nothing to do with control, it's just medium. Like, mm-hmm. If you're a producer in a you're making a TV show or whatever, it's like, okay, I need a consistent sound across the board, because we're going live, probably, mm-hmm. And if we're not going live, then we're going pretty close to live, and one of these guys could fall down, he could be drunk, something might get thrown off. They might get in a fight or something. But at least the sound is right, and we can cut to commercial, or right. We can cut to a scene of the audience. But if they're playing live and mess up, then that whole spell is broken.
Right.
You know?
Or you'd have an incident like on Ed Sullivan with a Jim Morrison saying, yeah, we can get you higher, baby. Still do it. You know, like, oh, well, there goes that agreement.
Yeah, that's... I love that movie. The Doors, Val Kilmer, deserved actor of the year for that, or for the decade. I mean, that was amazing. But I've seen that Ed Sullivan clip, and it's not as pronounced as it was in the movie. He just sang the words.
Yeah.
It's almost like he forgot not to sing it. It didn't look like he went out of his way to, like,
right.
You know, he's just doing his thing.
Yeah.
But it is funny how that did, it like pissed everybody off. Mm-hmm. It pissed everybody off. Like, come on.
And
man.
Got them banned.
Yeah. Reading that The Dirt by Nikki Sixx, or like by Motley Crue, and he's talking about how they're, you know, at their height of their fame, you know, they were living in California and just having these massive parties all the time. And Ray Manzarek would hang out. I'm gonna come over, and he's like, man, that dude was a fiend. Like, that guy wanted drugs all the time.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, and if he's this bad, I can't even imagine how bad he was. Because Ray's like supposed to be the tame one out of the band. But that is it for the old business. So we will be back with the new right after these messages.
In 1984, director James Cameron thrilled audiences with his vision of the future, the Terminator. In 1986, he created the science fiction masterpiece, Aliens. This summer, he will take you into a world no man has ever seen before.
Just, I realized a little while ago, it was brought to my attention that you may have heard a third voice there with us in the first segment, and we're joined by our very, very good friend, new grandpappy, Mr. Andy Gonzalez.
Woohoo! Woo.
Speak up, of Gonzo Toys and Collectibles.
I'm present.
Yeah, we love having Andy around. He's just a really, really great friend, and another guy that just loves some horror, and another guy that can talk. So,
yes, sir. Too much sometimes.
Yeah, I agree with that to a certain extent. All right, so Mr. Gomez, if you wouldn't mind bringing us in.
New business is new business, and this is new business.
Okay, so I got one piece of new business other than what's going to take up pretty much all the new business that we have. Of course, had a whole bunch of stuff, and then we had the incident occur this week that has pretty much blown up and has suddenly become a serious internet phenomena. It is just insane how that story has blown up. But to begin with, you know, we love our animal attacks. Animal attacks are always fun to talk about. And especially bear attacks, because you actually don't have bear attacks as often as you would think. But an Arizona man was recently mauled to death in a 100% unprovoked, incredibly rare black bear attack out in Arizona. So Mr. Steven Jackson, 66, has a piece of property out in Arizona, middle of nowhere, in Yavapai County, Arizona. So it's a forested area of Arizona. He bought several acres he's building his homestead on. And he's building it himself. So he goes out there one day to start working for he's doing like a weekend project thing. And he's sitting at a picnic table having a cup of coffee before he gets started. And a black bear just came and dragged his ass a couple of hundred yards away and killed him, mauled him in the woods. Neighbors heard him screaming, ran over to try to help. He was literally just sitting and having coffee at a table on his property. And this bear just decided to go ape shit and kill him. Dragged him 75 feet down one of the embankments. One of the neighbors was able to eventually run the bear off once he was shot by one of the neighbors, but unfortunately he was already dead at that time. So,
wow.
And black bears, where I'm from back in Louisiana, black bears are fucking everywhere. I mean, you see mm-hmm. them all the time. And I can't recall ever a black bear attack actually happening that was fatal in all my almost 50 years of living. But it's possible that it has happened that I'm just not aware of. But yeah, it's just a really, really odd thing that this bear just decided, hey.
Well, that was when we did the Sharks versus Bears episode, and like there was that country club where the lady was walking her poodle just across the green, and black bear got her and shoved her ass in a hole off in the woods. The black bears are not trustworthy, dude.
Did they test that bear for cocaine in its blood?
Not yet, as far as I can tell.
Everybody go out, dude, and see it if you haven't seen it.
That would be messed up if some kids were just trying to like recreate Cocaine Bear and just
slipped them some. Oh, man.
He's off the rope! He's off the rope!
Okay, so the next big story, which we're going to get into for a while, of course, is the story of what's the name of the damn boat?
Titan.
The Titan. A small submarine that had five people aboard that were going down to take a little excursion to view the Titanic. As of right now, it has been missing for 3 days, which is absolutely insane that it's been gone for that long. But some people paid an exorbitant amount of money to take a little tour down to view the wreckage of the Titanic. And they're almost immediately upon departure, they lost contact with the surface vessel that was kind of keeping track of them. And search is underway. They've literally did sonar searching on over 10,000 square miles, if I'm not mistaken. They have found no sign of this vessel. There's no communication. The story is just fucking insane. Just the idea, like we were talking earlier to Andy, that and Billy, there was no secondary, like they did no type of JSA. They didn't do any kind of risk assessment to say, well, what if they lose power and we lose communication? There was nothing. They can't pull it up. It's just out there on the bottom of the fucking ocean floor in almost 13,000 feet of water.
Or it's not on the bottom. Maybe it's on the top. But that's the problem, is you've got a craft that's the size, they say, of a minivan. And if you see those pictures of it,
they're tight as hell.
Five guys in a minivan. And, I mean, I don't know, you've flown in a Cessna before, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Like, I remember we went to Belize, and we had a little Cessna jump from the main island to the island we were staying on. And they rearrange you for weight in that airplane.
Right.
But you're, like, still really close together.
Right.
It's not like you're sitting off in the distance in the tail. It's like, you know, you're in this little bitty thing, and it's like this boat that they're on, the submarine, is about the same size as a Cessna plane. It could be floating on top of the water.
But you can't get out because it's locked from the outside.
And they can't, I mean, in reading rescues, I mean, all the stuff we've ever talked about with, like, the Bermuda Triangle, it's like, oh, why can't they find? It's like, I can't remember what the disaster was, where somebody was lost, and they're like, why can't, you know, and the pilot was like, dude, like, between, you know, when you're flying over the water, between the sun reflecting off the water, the choppiness of the water, stuff that's just in the water, like other boats or islands or trash or whatever, and like then you have schools of fish, and you have like depth variations to where you're like looking at little hilltops that are just under the surface, and it looks like something that's on the water. He's like, plus I'm only as good as my own eyesight, and I can only see a few hundred, you know, a few miles out, a few hundred yards. You know, I'm high up off the water. He's like, it is impossible to search and rescue the ocean from right. the air. Like mm-hmm. it's really, really difficult.
Yeah, because the closer to the water you are, the better your visibility is. But this amount of square footage, and the peripheral vision you have is super limited. You want to increase your peripheral vision, you have to increase height away, and then now your visibility.
Your visibility is shot. Yeah.
So it's a lose-lose situation.
And the way the sun reacts on swells and stuff, there's a lot. It's basically just, you know, it's illusions everywhere. You're not sure what you're seeing at all. I mean, I used to work out in the ocean on a rig, and you don't know what the hell you're looking at. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so the latest plan right now is, after it's been missing for 3 days, is there is a crane ship that is heading over there. And then there's another boat, I think it's a fresh vessel, called the Atalante, which has a underwater vehicle on it called the Victor. Now, apparently the Victor 6000 is the only submersible vehicle that will be capable of this feat, is that it has the ability to go down and attach a cable to the Titan, allowing the crane ship to haul it up. Problem is, they gotta find it first. They gotta know where the fuck it is before they can send the Victor, because the Victor 6000 can't just go, you know, drive it around trying to find it, because it's too vast. You know, it's just a messed up situation all around. And just this has blown up with people just trying to figure out what's going on, people being mean, people being vile. You know, there's some theories that funny theories that we've come up with of what could have happened. There's implosions. The best one that I've heard is Melissa came up with, the zombies from the Titanic decided to take revenge on the rich people. And when they got down there, they were like, okay, it's time for you guys to pay now, since we've been down here for all this time. But
all the Irish on the lower decks?
Yeah. They decided to get revenge on the billionaire.
I don't know if it was this craft, but I mean, James Cameron has gone down to the Titanic multiple times, and multiple times since the movie came out,
right,
just to study it and, you know, all that. So I mean, like, he's one of those people that would have been on this sort of craft. It's not, you know,
yeah.
whenever people, because we don't know the names of the people that are on it, but these are those types of people. They're not, you know, like I said, it was a museum tour.
Yeah.
That's what, I mean, it was a very expensive museum tour, and it's specialized, but, you know, it's like, what if they were to give you, like, I don't know, you're going to pay $500,000 and you're going to get to see the secret underground chambers under the pyramids, and you'll be like one of 200 people that have ever been able to see it. And then the tunnel collapses. You're going to laugh? I mean, that sucks. I mean, I would pay for that. I would go see that.
You know? But there's lots of stories coming out about the people that are on there. There's people saying that the CEO of Ocean Gate, which owns the vessel itself, has made comments where he basically thought that it's not so many words as safety is overrated, that, you know, we shouldn't be wasting money on certain things. And, you know, he was definitely not the type that would err on the side of caution.
Yeah.
I guess you could say. Because like I was saying earlier, they shouldn't have to attach something to it to pull it up with a crane. There should already be something attached. You know, when somebody jumps into a shark cage, you don't drop it down there and hope that they make it up. You have a secondary method for them to be able to get up.
Right. Well, in this submersible thing, the thing is, it's surprising me. Is not obviously the boat was designed the way that it was, and it's controlled the way that it was. I mean, it's been on multiple missions. It is what it is. I'm surprised they don't have a, just like, for lack of a better word, just like a beacon, like something like a shark tag.
Yeah,
it's like just tag that bitch. Thing over, you know. I realize that the depths are so far that you have to have certain specialized equipment, but not if it's inside the cabin.
Right.
It's just like, hey, here's a, what is it, the iPod thing, the geolocation, the little disc?
Yeah, air tag.
That little air tag. Like, here's a little, you know,
something
marine-worthy air tag. We're just going to stick that right on the side of the hull here, and if you run into trouble, you can all be shark poop for all we care, but we're going to pull the boat up.
Right.
We'll find the boat.
Yeah.
You know, but that's not even a thing. That's what's weird.
Yeah, I think you mentioned it, that this isn't its first voyage. It's second, third, fourth, or fifth. It's gone down many times down to the Titanic before. And I read some stories with some of the previous tourists that have gone down there. And you know, they've said it was like a nightmare. It was scary. And one guy was talking about an employee with that Ocean Gate being fired because he was trying to let them know that, hey, this glass is not tamper proof for this depth. It's only for this much. And the CEO was like, you know, no, it's good enough. You know, things like that. I mean, there's a lot of course, all this stuff is coming out now, but there've been questions for years about, you know, the integrity of that ship
and the thing about it is you got to realize that over time, the more you go down, the more you can, you know, cause damage to the integrity of that ship to where it's not going to be as functional as it would be before. It's like I was saying, just a quick hydrostatic pressure analysis at 10,000 feet, that's like 5,000 pounds of pressure put up against it. That's significant. I mean, if you have any type of loss with delta P to where it's pushing more from the outside, it's going to crumple quick. I mean, it's got seams. It's bolted from the outside. It wouldn't take much for that thing to really implode really, really quick and then to get ugly fast. And being that they were in contact with them beforehand, and then they just lost contact, they're not saying that there was any messages that there were problems.
Like no distress signals.
Right. So what about the banging? Don't know about the banging.
I heard about the banging. Yeah, I was going to talk about that,
30-minute banging every 4 hours.
That's the zombies that are just fucking with people.
You think so?
Yeah. There's rattling those tin cans they were having to drink.
Giving people false hope.
Yeah.
Or send more.
Send more paramedics.
Send more paramedics. It's angry giant squid, like, banging on the frying pan.
He's trying to beat it open. He's banging the Titan against a brick trying to get it opened up. But yeah, it's a crazy, crazy situation. That's for damn sure. It's very scary. Well, the articles you read about the former trips, did anybody ever say how long a typical round trip would last? I mean, how...
Like hours.
Yeah, it was...
Like 10 or 12 hours.
Just going down took several hours just to get down there. I remember my first deep sea, you know, fishing trip, leaving Galveston, I mean, the boat was going at a pretty, you know, steady speed, and we went out miles. And I remember it took 6 hours just to get to the spot to fish, and then six back, you know, and then another 3 hours of fishing. I'm thinking, you know, that thing's not just going to drop, you know, oh, hey, we'll be down in 30 minutes.
It's probably mm-hmm. Well, you can't, because you have to.
Hours.
You have to change pressure.
Right.
You have to adjust to the pressure. Yeah. You have to ballast it correctly to where you're falling down at the right rate, to where you don't cause that implosion.
Yeah. I mean, and assuming that, let's just assume it's a 12-hour total thing. I mean, they said they had, what, 72 to 96 hours of air?
96 hours of air with that number of people.
So, yeah, so that's equated in there for some reason. You know, you wouldn't just put that in there for a 12-hour trip. So they were expecting the trip to go longer or maybe complications, but I don't think they were expecting that kind of.
No.
Well, no, I mean, that's the thing, is in those sorts of things, they expect you to be gone for 18 hours max.
Right.
But mm-hmm. they're going to max out the air tanks for any kind of issue.
Right, because it's not like they have a bunch of food and water on board. That's just it. They have plenty of oxygen, but they got one toilet that isn't, they aren't.
Flushing.
It has to be, yeah, they aren't flushing. It has to be held within the vessel because there's certain regulations before you discharge any kind of waste. And I'm sure they don't have a Red Fox unit on the damn thing that's, you know, taking care of the waste and treating it before it gets discharged. So, and the thing about it is, like, I love you guys, but I wouldn't want to plan on being in a tight little pill like that for fucking 72 hours, let alone 96.
Dude, I think being able to see the Titanic would be awesome, but and I'm not one that carries around a bunch of anxiety. Like, I'm not scared of things.
But it would...
But if I... Like, I wouldn't get into that thing.
No.
I wouldn't get into that thing just because of claustrophobia.
James Cameron did all that work for us.
Yeah. Like, we can see screen. All that.
There's a display in Las Vegas that's awesome. It can, like, give you a really, really great idea of everything that's down there.
I think a lot of the shots that Bill Paxton was viewing in the movie and stuff was
James
real
Cameron's
footage.
Yeah, James Cameron's footage.
No, real footage. Yeah. Oh, you know, I was watching real quick Bill Paxton. You always have to stop a show to talk about Bill Paxton. when I was watching Commando last night, I was telling you, I was watching Commando, Arnold Schwarzenegger. I'm on a Schwarzenegger trip because of that Netflix special, Arnold. But anyways, I'd forgotten that Bill Paxton has this little cameo in there.
Yeah.
He's one of the radio guy that he's telling them when they're flying, him and Ray Dong Chong are flying that plane. That they better bring it down or they're going to get shot down. But anyways, rest in peace, Bill Paxton.
Yeah, I miss him. I miss him more than some dead relatives.
You know,
he was just incredible, man.
Yeah, he was.
For Terminator, for Predator 2, for Twister, for Near
True
Dark.
Lies. Everything.
True Lies.
Dude, all of the movies he was in, but I love, there's some, there's like a 30-minute, like, MTV or VH1.
Talking about Fishheads.
Fishheads.
Oh, dude, when I was a kid, me and my cousin used to watch that when I was a kid. I didn't know who the hell he was at that time. Me and my cousin thought it was amazing.
Roly-poly Fishheads. Fishheads. Yeah. Roly-poly Fishheads.
And he's just like, yeah, so it's like art school.
You go to the movies with the Fishheads. Fish heads.
Fishheads to the Sunday matinee.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah. Dude, but... Like, all of his accomplishments, you have all of them, and then you have that. And you're like, that is weird and, like, out there bizarre. But the fact that he's like, yep, I'm in. Let's do it.
We do a Paxton episode, honestly.
Oh, gosh, you can go, you can do a part one and a part two.
How incredible of a guy he was, man. God. Okay, so that's where we're at right now. By the time this... Chances are, by the time the show comes out, they're going to declare him dead or something, because they've got less than 20 hours of oxygen left.
Yeah.
So it's coming down to nut cutting time at this point. And, you know, as I said, they have this vessel that's supposed to get there by midnight tonight. So that's five fewer hours of air than they have right now. Then they got to try to find it. Then they're going to try to send Victor down there to go ahead and connect to it. Then they got to pull it up. It's down to the wire. I mean,
it's going to have a megalodon stuck to it. Thrashing around.
Like... I was thinking of a giant squid or the Kraken.
The
Kraken's the one down there that's beating on stuff. So, but besides just, you know, the actual seriousness of everything, this is seriously turned, and just, we were saying earlier, when we look back at things like this that happened when we were younger, and I brought up baby Jessica and some other stuff. The way the internet is reacting to this shit is really weird.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't even know what's happening with these people yet, and there's these ridiculous memes coming out. They're dragging family members all over the place. It's just a really weird thing. We've turned into a kind of a shitty society, big time. I mean, this is definitely bringing out some of the worst of it. And granted, I'm laughing at some of the memes, because they're inventive. I mean, they're...
Well, funny is funny. I mean, there's always gallows humor. It doesn't It doesn't mean your heart's in a bad place. To come up with, like... To me, it's less the comedy, because you have to laugh to keep from crying.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's the tears of a clown. That's just how comedy actually works. The things that get me, and you we'll talk about it in a second, because it is extraordinarily new business, and it's hilarious. But people talking about these guys, because they're very rich, they're spending so much money on this tour, like, oh, it's billionaires, we can, you know, eat the rich, or teach them to eat themselves, or all this, like, oh, they're going through all this crap. It's like, haha, celebrating their downfall because they're rich.
Mm-hmm.
It's like... That is cruel.
Oh, yeah, shit. Especially...
Because who are these people? Do you know who these people are? Do you know what they might have invented? Do you know why they're rich? Are they evil? Are they like Hitler? Or are they like...
But so Olivia.
And it's like right now, and this is just going back and forth on just the internet trip. Elon Musk was your hero until he bought Twitter and then changed some rules you didn't like, and now he's the villain. But Bill Gates is also a billionaire, but somehow he's a good guy.
Right.
Even though he's...
He does weird shit, too.
He's weird as hell. Like, and not even his politics, but just he's a weird-ass dude.
Right.
Like, rich does not necessarily mean evil, and poor doesn't necessarily mean good. It's just like, these are people in there, man.
Right.
And well, they're all Olivia. Shoved in a fucking, like, porta-potty right now at the bottom of the damn ocean, probably within sight of the Titanic, but it's too dark to see.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, one of the passengers is literally one of the guys with 18, 19-year-old son. You know, that kid didn't know any better. And honestly, the parents should have known better than to take his fucking 18, 19-year-old son down on this journey. Because I've been saying, when you do some shit like this, there's a reasonable expectation that it's going to end up fucked up.
Yeah.
If I jump out of an airplane to go skydiving, there's a reasonable expectation that I might die. You know, I'm not going to have my kid jump out there with me.
Yeah.
You know, it was just really, really ignorant. It was just not a good thing, all right? But there's some just crazy shit going on with this whole thing. Like we were talking earlier, Olivia has been following this stuff on TikTok. And TikTok is apparently blowing up with this shit like crazy.
Oh, yeah.
I don't go on TikTok at all, but she was telling me that, and we talked about this earlier, but apparently when you got into the craft, they played, and this is from people that have been on it before, they play this like this intro video where they explain to you how it works and some of the safety features and stuff. And the intro to the video, as they're talking about what you're going to see, you know, you're going to see the Titanic, they play Celine Dion's song, whatever the fuck it's called.
My Heart Will Go On.
My Heart Will Go On. And it apparently when they were trying to reestablish connection, they kept restarting, rebooting the thing. So there's a chance that for like the first 24 hours, Celine Dion was basically playing on a loop in a 5-foot by 10-foot room with five other people that you're sitting in there with, which is just, I can't imagine the hell. Could you imagine how crazy they're going right now?
Oh, yeah.
It'd probably be more fitting if it was playing that crazy flute version. No, we'll go on.
Yes.
But you know what? Going back to what Billy was saying, when you have these people who have this money that's just, they can just basically throw away, they have so much of it, and they schedule a flight to space, you know, whenever something happens to those people during that adventure that 99% of us can't afford, it's hard to have even sympathy,
yeah,
much less empathy, because there's no way, we've never experienced any of that. But can we even think of it? I can't even think of what it's like, other than what I've seen in the movies, to go to space or to go to the abyss. But it's very interesting to think that, you know, because they're 1%ers typically, that the 99% don't really have a lot of sympathy for them. And that's so
rough,
bad.
Because if you think about it, because the people who, like, if you think about, oh, you want to go see your grandma in Sheboygan, you can hop on a plane and fly over there today. Coach, sorry, you don't get the extra, like, nice Ritz crackers because in first class your seat's only this much bigger, right? Yeah. But the reason that you can do that is because dudes strapped themselves to rockets.
Yeah.
And with no idea what was going to happen.
Right.
And, you know, they weren't one percenters. They didn't get a chance to, like, they didn't necessarily buy into it, but some of them did.
Well, yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, but that's how these things work, is you have explorers.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, Christopher Columbus, you know, he didn't have the money. He got sponsored. And he went, but then there was a whole lot of other people that were just like, I got the money. I'm going to go get me some shit.
Yeah.
And, like, when their boat sank, yeah, it sucks and it lands in history, but we wouldn't, nobody would be here if there weren't people who were willing to put try, up the right. funds to try and yeah. look. And, like, Titanic visits, I guess, is probably an ancillary thing to submarine yeah. technology innovation, right? Like,
yeah.
it's like, this is how they fund that. It's like, you know, because ultimately it would be easy enough to probably build some structure at the bottom and an elevator, you know, as yeah. far as this to liabilities anyway. Just like
yeah, that's that little trip there is like the luxury tax square on Monopoly. Man, you know, I don't have to pay the luxury tax because I don't do luxurious things, you know.
Right. Yeah.
They paid a lot of money for this, but unfortunately, they're paying with their life too. And, you know, let's step away from those folks there and let's put it in a different context that I think we can all understand. And we're all dads here. So Kobe Bryant and his daughter, right? They die in a tragic helicopter accident. Mm-hmm. I remember reading people, well, if he just took the car, like, all of everybody else on that team who couldn't afford a fancy helicopter to fly to not hit traffic, you know, then he'd probably still be alive. Whether that's true or not, Kobe died and his daughter died.
Right.
I mean, this was a real, yeah, and the pilot too, who had family too. You know, these are real people, you know, and I remember when that first happened, you know, it really hurt my heart because I have daughters, you know, and I thought, wow, you know, can you imagine what was going through Kobe's head knowing that they're going down or something happened and in a split second, I'm sure all he's thinking is, I can't do anything to save my daughter's life. No matter how much money I have, I literally can't do anything for her. And that's it. It's over. But so I think people on Twitter and Instagram and TikTok and all these, they really need to stop and think about, you know, their attitude about this. Sure,
yeah.
There's a little bit of humor that goes, but again, it's because, hey, you know what? If you're either going to laugh or you're going to cry, right? And if we want a little bit of humor, that's fine. But I think there needs to be a line drawn.
Definitely.
And in this day and age, these younger folks specifically, they don't have those lines.
Yeah, it's a cruelty thing.
Yeah, it really is.
It is, and it's everybody just trying to be edgy and everything else. They think that it's
hot
cool
takes
thing.
Like you like.
Yeah.
All right, and to bring it down a notch or to bring it up, I don't know, because it was kind of a downer. We'll know by the time this episode comes out, and we'll report on it next week. But another thing that was in new business that this other thing, the Titanic thing, took over. Has anybody been paying attention to what's going on Reddit? So, I've only ever used Reddit, not really, like, to post stories, because of No Sleep, that's where the podcast started, is the No Sleep forum. And I kind of got dragged into it kicking and screaming, because, you know, I'm old. This was like 10 years ago, but still. It's like, I'm old, and I don't like new things, and I never understood what the whole Reddit thing was about. So it took me like many years to figure out how to use it. I finally did. But now I mostly just use it to kind of peruse answers. Like, oh, hey, you need to fix your washing machine. You need to see some boobs. I mean, it's like the internet inside of the internet, and it's pretty awesome. But recently they've had a top-down change, like at the CEO level, and that guy thinks that they're not making enough money. So it's extremely long and extremely complicated why the people who actually run Reddit, who are volunteers, are upset with the people who own Reddit, and it's a back and forth thing. But the moderators went on protest, and they're like, okay, we're going to shut down our subreddits, which is the forums, until you give us a little respect. And the CEO of Reddit was like, dear everybody, if you don't like your moderator shutting down your subreddits, then send us an email and we'll get rid of them and put in new people. So that didn't work. But what seems to be working is there's this fun little thing. Reddit has a rule that you can't be violent and you can't be like kiddie porn, but everything else is pretty much open. So all of these mainstream moderators just set all of their subreddits to not safe for work and publicly invited all of the pornographers, all the OnlyFans girls, all of the chicks with dicks and everything that, like, all whatever you want to see, please. Our forum is now open to you because it is in compliance with Reddit's rules, but we're not going to moderate it out. And so yesterday, subreddit Batman was all about Batman. And today it's about Buttman and Throbbin. the whole site just went porn like that. So we'll see, because if you have a million different forums with a team of moderators running them, and then you have a bunch of admin that those moderators report to, as long as you're inside of compliance with the rules, they can't really do much to you. They can, it's the internet and it's their company, like, but the moderators, there's tens of thousands of them. If you're going to replace them with hired employees to do what they do so that your rules can be followed, I don't know if that's going to be a good financial decision. Right. We're going to have to hire a lot of people to...
It's a huge site. Reddit is huge.
Is there a competitor, a Bizarro Reddit anywhere out there?
Not really, no. because Reddit didn't ever go fully into social media like, Facebook and Instagram or whatever. Like, Reddit's always been forum-based.
Yeah.
It's got social media features that you can follow people and follow back and, have your friends list. But mostly it's a forum thing. Like, I'm following hashtag bass guitar. I'm following hashtag guitar hero. I'm following, Texas history, whatever it may be. But inside of that line, then it goes back to when it was created. So if you're looking for a history, it's a searchable forum, not really a social media platform,
right,
per se.
So, there was a time where there were tons of forum websites. I mean, there was a couple that I used to get heavily into. And Tiger Droppings was a big one for me. But Reddit was the one that kind of like blew up and took over. And now you have a lot of forum-based websites still. They still exist, but nothing to the point of what Reddit is.
I think those other ones also fell on accident or whatever into what Reddit is doing now, which is started being more porn-based.
Well,
it was not as...
A lot of the forums, they kind of went niche, where you had no forums for bodybuilding, you had forums for this, that had lots of sub-forums in them, but they were all kind of like tied into the same topic.
Yeah,
Reddit's one that was just over, it just covered everything. You can find subreddits for pretty much anything out there.
Yeah.
And that's what made it get so big.
Right, and like you say, it's like, because... There was obviously access to porn because porn is a subject in the zeitgeist, right? Mm-hmm. But it wasn't focused on that. Mm-hmm. And if that's what their user base cultivated, right, then that's what it would ultimately turn into, kind of like Tumblr. Tumblr was one that was very highly regarded and used by Neil Gaiman, in the MySpace era, right? Tumblr was kind of a blog-based site, and But there was a lot of porn on there. And then Tumblr was like, hey, guess what? We're going to get rid of all the porn, right? Somebody failed to point out to the people who ran Tumblr that 80% of their website was porn, so whenever they cut it off, what was left wasn't enough to sustain the rest of the site.
Yeah.
Like, they didn't have enough traffic to sell advertising or whatever. And Tumblr still exists, but it's nowhere near as big as it was.
Yeah.
Reddit has always been really good at being a pretty good model for actual society. Like, yeah, there's porn. Like, yeah, there's... That's what's... It's there because people are interested, but it's also vastly not porn. That's what makes this whole takeover hilarious. Is it's like, yeah, there's all these other things, and if you want to take a walk down the red light, then you can, mm-hmm. but that's not why people go there in general.
Yeah.
But then, did we just not know that it was because it was being held back by all these moderators that were like, man, I get spammed with porn all day long. Like, right. Me too, bro. Man.
Right.
Like,
then they just unleashed the floodgates.
Now they're just like, you know what?
Open the dam. Open the dam. Allow it to go.
Open the dam. Let it flood. Let it go. Anyway, that was a... had to bring it up a little bit.
Right. Well, Reddit's huge. Like I told you what Reddit is to... my kids are huge on Reddit. They love Reddit. They go to it daily, multiple times a day. So there's some good stuff on Reddit. Reddit's a good platform for a lot of things.
You know, if your submarine's sinking to the bottom and you can't contact the top, but you still have a little internet access, hit you some Reddit. Right about now, you'd be like, what the fuck is going on?
Head on over to the Celine Dion forum subreddit.
It's the blacksmithing subreddit, and some old guy's like, why is there so much nude girls over here? All right, man, we're going to take a break, and we'll be right back.
At a depth of 4,000 feet, they roam harmlessly, minuscule, and unseen by human eyes. At 20,000 feet, they've been known to eat full-grown sharks. But what if those at 40,000 feet were to rise from the deep?
Yes, we are.
And there's a little addendum to the new business, because it's just been a busy week, man. It's been a busy pop culture news week, but we also lost Treat Williams.
Yes.
Who, Andy and I were just talking about it during the break. Dead Heat. It was a... horror. It wasn't really horror. It wasn't a comedy. I won't say horror comedy, but it wasn't a comedy. It was serious all the way through. It was a hard-boiled 80s buddy cop movie where they're actually undead.
Yeah. It had tropes. It had horror tropes.
It was a zombie movie.
Marvel zombie version of Beverly Hills Cop, but with two cop buddies. Joe Piscopo was pretty much the only humor.
Yeah.
In that. It was pretty serious, pretty creepy.
And the story is, you know, cops get shot up and killed, but then they are exposed to a chemical that revives them, so they are able to come back and avenge their own deaths, basically.
Solve the crime.
And that was the first time we ever saw Treat Williams. Well, Treat Williams, who's been in a lot of movies and TV over the years, passed away. He was on a motorcycle Mm-hmm. He was in a motorcycle crash in his home in his town in Vermont.
Well, I will bring up just my first experience with Treat Williams was, of course, 1941.
With John Belushi.
Yes. Yeah, that was an awesome movie. So I revisit that one every once in a while to this day.
I just
from being a kid. I used to watch it all the time as a kid. That movie is hilarious. Dude. Yeah. It was pretty fucking funny. But yeah, sorry, continue.
No. But in prepping for this episode, like the horror at sea, it is by far not the best of a list. It's only topical because Treat was in it. And he just passed away. But then when I thought about it, this is one that gets... It does... To me, it does not have its respect that it should. As far as either disaster movies or weird horror movies. You know, Ebert said that it was one of his worst movies ever because it was just an alien copy. Which is absolutely not... The only thing that I ever thought Deep Rising screwed up is that they showed the end of the movie in the trailer.
Yeah.
With him and Famke Janssen on the jet skis flying away from the exploding boat. It's like, well, if you know the boat exploded...
And they survive. Yeah. You pretty much know where the movie is.
They didn't really put a lot of thought back then into the trailers. I remember they used to give away some of the best parts of the movies back then.
But Deep Rising is I remember, because I've seen it recently, I saw it in a hotel, I think, when I was, so earlier this year, actually, I saw, like, the second half of it. Man, those monsters were brutal, because they're, like, sucking people down like straws, like a Capri Sun. And then they're spitting body parts and, like, all kinds of, like, they're going into different rooms, and it just looks like there was a people explosion everywhere because those worms were just getting them.
Yeah.
Like, it was a certainly effective monster movie. It had plenty of violence and gore. You know, it had its moments of like, man, this is stupid. But, I mean, it's freaking stupid.
Right.
It is a deep-sea monster movie.
Yeah.
But it's like it switched dimensions. Because even if you remember the end, they get away and they get onto the shore. After they blow up the monster, they get on the shore and there's another big monster on shore and they're like...
Spoiler alert.
Well, I mean, it came out in what, like 95?
Yeah. Yeah, the tagline was, "This ain't no pleasure cruise." That was their tagline.
Yeah. I mean, but that's one of those, I think, it's underrated. It's a highly underrated horror movie. I don't think it gets the same respect as something like, because it's another one I want to talk about, is Ghost Ship.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Well, Ghost Ship has that opening scene that has just become a phenomenon.
It's the iconic opening scene, but Ghost Ship is still really good. It was a good ghost story.
Remind me, was it the wiring? Mm-hmm. It was electrical wiring that came across a piano?
It was piano wire.
No, it was a like an anchor.
It was a tension cable. Yes.
And then they hooked it onto something so that it would just zip out. Everybody, that it was really, really thin.
Well, you know, so I have, if people don't have IMDb as a saved app on their phone, they should. I live on IMDb because I just love the little facts that, you know, I didn't know, or sometimes to double check on something that I think I know. But yeah, the frightening and intense scenes on Deep Rising were moderate, but the violence and gore is rated as severe. So yeah,
really?
It was definitely violent and gory, Deep Rising. But yeah, the frightening stuff, I mean, especially if you're like us horror fanatics, it really wasn't that scary.
Right.
It's definitely bloody, and that was a cool part of it.
Well, you know, Billy had mentioned something being a kind of a ripoff of Aliens. If you want to talk ripoff of Aliens, you definitely got to talk Leviathan. With Peter Weller. I mean, that was the Thing and Aliens combined together pretty much.
Yeah.
And, but it's a good movie. It's not a bad movie at all. You got Mick Foster in it. Peter Weller, they're lined up by a corporation oversee underwater mining operation. At the bottom of the sea, the crew stumbles upon and investigates a sunken ship, only to bring a life form back to their own. The creature slaughters crew members and causes them to grotesquely mutate
Beck must save who he can and get back to the surface before the vessel is overtaken.
It definitely steals a lot from other movies, but it wasn't a bad movie at all for the time and everything.
Yeah, Colonel Troutman was in that one too.
Yeah.
Richard Crenna.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But during that time, 1989 apparently was the year of deep sea movies.
Right.
For damn sure.
It seems like it was.
Yeah, the Abyss. Right after, yeah, the Abyss, yeah, which yeah. won an Academy Award for visual effects, which was pretty impressive. That's the thing I like that was most impressive about that entire movie were the visual effects.
Well, and that's you know, because we started off the show talking about Titanic, and that's James Cameron.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. James Cameron made the Abyss, and this is the Abyss is between Terminator, like...
It was a precursor
right, it was because it's between Aliens and Terminator 2, because mm-hmm. James Cameron didn't do Terminator 1 or Alien.
Well, you know, when
but he improved the series.
Yeah.
In a stellar way. So I'm not knocking, but man, James Cameron comes out of nowhere with The Abyss, and I think he's just a gifted writer in such a way, because between Titanic, like, he perfected it. The horror at sea, but and we'll talk about Titanic 2, because it's not a horror movie at all, but it's fucking scary. You know,
it is the whole long scene of it breaking apart. But with The Abyss, you know, we're giving a lot of kudos to James Cameron. to James Cameron. But I watched a series on ILM, Industrial Light and Magic, which is Lucas's company, and James Cameron gives all the credit to ILM, because he said, you know, it's one thing to write these stories, but it's another one to bring them to life. And when they were writing that script and they were, you know, going over it, like, this is what we want, we just don't know how the heck we're going to do it. And I got to watch the whole process in this ILM series. And you know, it starts from 77 Star Wars, 76 Star Wars making of, and it goes through. So without The Abyss, T2 didn't happen.
Right.
So The Abyss was kind of like, you know, the starting point.
Yeah, the testing ground
for the T-1000. So, but yeah, ILM definitely needs to get a lot of credit for how amazing the graphics were in The Abyss.
Well, one thing, just some Abyss trivia that when I was researching the show, I found out about. Apparently, Ed Harris was miserable during the filming of The Abyss, and it was like a really, really bad deal. And
was it claustrophobia or something?
Well, he almost drowned in one of the scenes. Mm-hmm. And apparently, he kind of hem-hawed as far as actually saying that it was true, but apparently he punched James Cameron in the face
really?
At one point, because it just got... There's a part where they're filming this scene and he's trying to keep this woman from drowning and going away, and he's slapping her and stuff, and nobody said that the camera had run out of film.
Oh, goodness.
And he got furious about it because he's
True
wasting his time
again.
Slapping somebody. Mm-hmm. And apparently they say that one of the reasons The Abyss didn't do as well as it should have is that he refused to talk about it. He didn't do any of the promotional stuff. He didn't do any press shit, because he had such a miserable experience working with Jim, as he puts it. He calls him Jim. But yeah, apparently there's a lot of drama behind The Abyss.
I think that was a scene with Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio.
Yeah.
I think it was that scene.
Yeah. And apparently James Cameron at one point almost had a near-drowning experience during the filming also in the little pool that they were using.
I'm sure Steven Spielberg hears those stories like amateurs. It's him and Richard Dreyfuss. And they had a hell of a time.
Oh, could you imagine the
filming Jaws? Jesus.
Well, what always gets me, and this has got nothing to do with at-sea horror or movies, but there's those people, there's those characters, like James Cameron, for example. You know, there's actors that are known for being like Chevy Chase or whatever.
Yeah, he's known to be horrible.
And so you think about, like, you go to your work every day, and you can have a salty demeanor, but if you're an asshole, HR's going to call you in at some point and be like, hey, check yourself. But it's like with certain with Hollywood, it's like certain actors and directors and so it's like James Cameron. It, like I've heard that he's an asshole, and he's a controlling one. And he, but he was that way before he had a hit. So is it just that he's a driver, mm-hmm. and nobody has the balls to go kick him off set and be like? Because yeah. I'm sure if the page boy bringing in the coffee was an asshole, they'd be like, okay, page boy,
you're fired. We got somebody
get out of here. Job.
Right.
You just yeah. got this guy over here that's behind the camera, and he's like, okay. And he doesn't even have fish heads behind him. You know, he's just some dude with a beard. And he's like, okay, I got a good idea. You mm-hmm. know, like it's weird to me how some people like bulldog their way into jobs, yeah. and other people are like, okay, I'm doing the best I can. They're like, not good enough. Get out of here.
Yeah.
And you're like.
I read that Dino De Laurentiis was a lot like that too, and was hard to please.
Well, look at Stanley Kubrick.
Yes, same thing. With
but
Stanley
see,
Kubrick.
Were they that way after they had the success?
I think it was before. I think it was ingrained in them.
Yeah, I was gonna say because it would be one thing if you're a driver. Like it's one thing. It's like okay, I've brought you in billions of dollars. You leave me alone.
Yeah.
Versus, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm hoping I'm doing a good job. Get the fuck out of my room. Like, it seems a little... You know what I mean? It just seems a little...
Well, a prime example of that, and some people love him, some people hate him, is Quentin Tarantino. From the get-go, he was already... No, I want to do this my
yeah.
way.
Yeah.
And if the studio said, well, we want to change it, okay, well, that's okay, thank you. And he'd walk away before he made his smash hits.
Mm-hmm.
So there are some directors that, yeah, they're already like that. I guess Cameron...
I mean,
and Ed could take it.
He's certainly he's got the chops. Right. Not going to argue. He's obviously right.
Well, I appreciate him for bringing us The Abyss because that was a.
But and think what it is at that time. You know, Ed Harris could have said, "Fuck it." He was an established actor.
Oh, yeah.
He was. It's not like he was trying to break into Hollywood or anything like mm-hmm. that. But he. That just shows you the weight that James Cameron has. One of his movies, you're not going to quit a James Cameron film.
Well, Ed Harris did an amazing job too in that movie, though.
Yeah,
very emotional.
I think every like even the drones in that movie were characters.
Mm-hmm.
Like so like even whenever you felt the third tier characters
yeah.
die, they all had like at least a little line or a personality or at mm-hmm. least something. So whenever the rig crashes and they're yeah. walking through, it's like, it's not just them seeing their friends dead. You're seeing their friends dead. Like, it was...
We were talking about those scenes, too, where they're in suits walking on the ocean of the abyss, walking on the floor of it, going across, and they're just like, all, the camera view is inside the suit, you know, like barely breathing, like getting mm-hmm. asthma, feel like you're getting an asthma attack. You know, and it's pitch dark all around you, you know, and you're trying to get to that other, you know, because this one's collapsing and whatnot. I mean, that's horror in and of itself because
and
it's
they're just
real.
Hanging off the edge that whole
just
time.
Just hanging off the edge.
It's not like they're at the bottom and the bottom sucks. They're hanging off the edge and this
then
place sucks. but then as soon as this falls down, it's
right.
all over.
Right.
And then Michael Bane, who's always... He's always the hero. He's always the good guy. He's always... Yeah. And then he just... Pressure gets him. And he flips out.
Total asshole. Piece of shit.
And then when that submersible collapses... I think... I mean, I was telling Scott earlier. It was like... You don't think about... I mean, a lot of people do single scenes. So it's a single scene in a movie that's not scary. That's, you know, like... The Abyss was not supposed to be a scary movie.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be... a suspenseful movie, but it wasn't like a vampire or a slasher. It was
right,
like
yeah.
But Michael Bane with that submersible, and he's just got all the power in the world because he's gonna blow up that bomb. He's
yeah.
just like, and then that big crack across his window appears, and it's just like, oh god, like how'd
the lights start go out?
Yeah, like everything just starts because and his submersible starts to implode, and
yeah.
you're just like, God, this sucks so bad.
Yeah.
And even now, like that, like they were already in an untenable position, but now he's not going home.
No.
Like, he's not getting out. He's got miles and miles and miles of darkness in front of him. Or
and that's what these folks on the Titan are probably experiencing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, little by little as the time goes on.
Well, what I love is your point, that, you know, did somebody think that, you know, they told us we only have 96 hours of air for five of us. What if it's only one?
I can hang out here for a while. Come on, guys.
Got something to eat now?
Yep. Yeah, I might start smelling in a couple of days. But
like that scene in Harlem Nights.
We should call, what's his name? God damn it. He's all over. He's the actor.
The actor.
Drew Maverick.
Okay, Drew. Okay.
Tell Drew that he needs to make a movie about this sunken submersible with five guys in it with 96 hours. And it's a guy basically who can, like, figure out math.
It's basically Alive in the Andes Mountains.
He's got his Casio calculator, and he figures out 96 times five equals a chance.
Yeah.
So,
could you imagine a murder mystery at a 5x10 foot?
Which one of y'all? Which one of y'all?
Who can the killer be?
Okay, we're falling back into that nasty shit right now.
I'm sorry. I apologize.
Let's talk about.
I didn't say anything.
Let's talk about people getting eaten by sharks or something.
Yeah.
Where do you guys want to go?
They're way below sharks now.
Yeah.
If anything's going to get them, it's either going to be,
you know,
megalodons or giant squids.
You know, the whole idea of things underwater, you know, obviously started off, we won't go into Jaws too much. I think y'all have
we talk about that a lot.
Beaten that shark to death. But, you know, anything that was in the water that you could not see, so past your feet, looking down, you can't see, has always been scary to me. I love the scene in Clash of the Titans, no pun intended on the Titan down there. You mentioned the Kraken, the whole thing, how it lives underwater, and it's Poseidon goes down there and opens
the gate, says, "Come on, pop,"
and it just swims out. It's just like, it's amazing to think that something that huge could possibly, like a megalodon, could possibly living in the depths of the ocean that we will never know.
Well, for so long, there's been like a tremendous fascination among just pop culture and society about the unknown. I mean, there's areas of the ocean that we have no idea what's down there. I mean, people are constantly finding new species of animals that live in depths that we can't go to. So God knows what is down there. Is that mystery that...
Yeah,
it's an amazing thing for people, and that's why that's been. I mean, since the fucking
dawn of time,
30s and 40s in Hollywood.
You're talking about movies, but no. I mean, it's because it's part of the human condition. Right. What's out there? Monsters.
We know more about space than we do about underwater in our own depths of the oceans.
Well, and it's one of those, like, when early on Scott and I were talking, and this is a departure, but it's. We have all kinds of technology and storytelling apparatus that allow us to see the world through a certain lens. When Scott and I first started the podcast, one of the first things we were talking about was like the Salem witch trials. You're like, oh man, that's crazy. It's religious ideals and religiosity and people being superstitious and weird and crazy and blah. Except for then you look at agriculture, seasonality, hostilities from outside, whether it be from Native Americans or Spanish or whoever, and you have a bag of wheat, and it doesn't, like, if a rat gets into it and fucks it up, you and your family are dead. Like, you don't have enough to get you through the winter.
Right.
And your cow's milk starts going bad, and you got beef with the neighbor. It's not a HOA, they wanted me to cut my yard shit. You're like, they're casting spells.
Yeah.
Like, and you live in a world where all of this stuff is real constantly. You're not just, like, pulling it out of your ass because you went to the fucking crystal store.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, this is the world you live in. This is the universe you live in. You're like, oh, shit, some weevils got in my flower, or a rat got in there, or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
It amplifies, and, like, we've actually been weaning off of that mythology for hundreds of years. But imagine being in it. You know, it's like, oh, you're standing on the shore, and you've seen a guy get attacked by a shark 50 yards out. How far are you willing to go to figure out if it falls off the other side?
Yeah.
Like, who gets to go first? You know, you like tie some slaves to a raft or something and like let them out and see how far they go before they fall off. You know, it's like it's not illogical because are you going to step on there and see where it goes unless you've got this thirst for adventure?
Yeah, there were some men or women that were brave enough to go out there, and there was others that were not, and they forced somebody else to do it.
Yeah.
But somebody had to do it. Yeah.
So, I mean, scary as hell, but it's like, wow.
And going back to topic, just, you know, a boat goes out and it doesn't come back, or just, you know, some timbers wash up ashore from the vessel. There was no technology back then to figure out what happened, so you just assume the Kraken must have got it.
Yeah.
You know, you start just, the imagination just starts going crazy, and that's where the cryptids come from deep sea that we talked about before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because, you know, you also probably had sightings. People would say, hey, pulled up this giant tentacle thing in our net that got out right before we got at the surface, but we saw these giant tentacles. So then you start thinking, well, what must be on the end of it? And just these stories start coming out. I mean, there's some crazy shit down there.
It's funny that the first time I ever, I don't read as much as Billy, obviously. Billy reads, but I don't read as much. But my first introduction to mermaids actually not being nice and actually being mean and creatures was, I think, that Harry Potter movie. Like, seriously, and that was just, what, in the last couple of decades, you know? I didn't think that, you know, I always thought sirens were something good. Growing up, I thought sirens, like, ooh, there's these, like, sexy women that, no, they actually...
They call people to crash.
into the rocks about that when and I was a kid. Die. Yeah. And, I mean, these are all, you know, things of the sea that somebody's, like you said, you don't just crash your boat. Something made you crash.
Right.
Like I said, I think they were haunted by these women, these mermaids, these sirens.
Because they knew better than to run into the rocks. Something caused them to
think.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, and that's the thing, too, is, like, depending on the tide, depending on what, all kinds of different factors. Fog, you know, your visibility.
Yeah, sons of things are going to happen, you know?
There's so many different ways you could crash a boat, and that's why, like, most shipwrecks are in, like, little harbors. It's because they were in home port, they knew where they were going, they just ran into something because the tides were weird, or they lost track of the light or something.
Yeah. And the folks can do this on their own or if they want homework, but there's conspiracy theory out there about the Titanic that it was a job.
Mm-hmm.
It was an inside job.
It's one of those things, like, we talked about some conspiracy theories in the past, so, because I'm open, like, I'm not a Joe Rogan where I'm just like shift on the wind depending on what the subject matter is, but when it comes to conspiracy theories, I always have to follow the money.
Right.
What is the end game?
Yeah, the end.
What gets anybody in or out? Because you're not going to spend money and pull people into confidence and create a conspiracy around any sort of thing if there's no profit at the end, right? If you got rid of somebody because they suck, at least they're not around sucking anymore, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, you kind of come out ahead. And the thing with Titanic was that the Olympic was a sister ship that had all kinds of problems and damage and was not seaworthy. And so the conspiracy is that they flipped the Titanic and the Olympic and like rebranded them so that the bad ship sunk.
Get rid of it. Yeah.
But then they also had all those millionaires from all those banking people and millionaires from both America and England drop into the bottom of the ocean that then sets into motion the whole banking system.
The control of the banking system.
Yeah, the private banking of the Federal Reserve.
Mm-hmm. Because before, there were, they had control over that now.
And World War One.
Mm-hmm.
Because you had all these people who were extremely rich and influential that were not in favor of going to war. Yeah. Kaboom.
Yeah. So I didn't mean to start conspiracy theories.
I'm all about it, dude. I love it.
Just from my experience as someone who has worked on cruise ships and who has actually worked on a lot of maritime vessels and stuff, shit happens. We've been in wrecks many times when I was on both the paddle wheel boats and also working offshore. And normally it's complacency. Mm-hmm. You assume that everything's going to be fine, and then some shit happens that you're not prepared for. One of the coolest wrecks that we had, I remember when I was working on the American Queen paddle wheel boat, the big fucking 300-foot long, 7-story tall paddle wheel boat. Woke up one morning, and I go for a jog. We were supposed to be docked in, I think it was Chester, Illinois. And I woke up, and I was going to go for a job for my shift, and I go out on the deck, and we're in the middle of the woods. And I'm like, what the fuck happened? And so one of the mates goes, dude, got in a wreck last night. What ended up happening is the pilot that was on duty in the engine room was this really, really big fat dude, like morbidly obese guy. And they found out, because of this wreck, what he had been doing is, instead of getting up and checking his gauges at night, he had a pair of binoculars, so he wouldn't have to get from his chair. And he would just look with his binoculars at the gauges to see if they were all good. And because he never got up and just sat there, he fell asleep. And we ran into the fucking, a bunch of woods because he wasn't paying attention to shit and engines had shut down.
How did you not feel that?
We felt it when we were going through, how did I not feel it to wake up? A lot of people just slept through it.
Oh, wow.
We just went straight through some woods, knocking trees down and shit. We were stuck there for like 48 hours till they finally pulled us out.
Yeah.
But that wasn't the only time shit like that happened. Just people get complacent. They do the same thing over and over again. So they think that it's going to happen the exact same way every time. So they kind of take it easy and they don't do the proper things they're supposed to do. So yeah, accidents like that shit used to happen all the time. I mean, it was... So to me, looking at it, I can see where even experienced pilots are into an iceberg.
Yeah.
Because of complacency.
Well, I know some other movies that you had mentioned. You had mentioned Leviathan.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you guys covered a lot of the monster ones, you know, considering y'all had Jaws, some of the blockbuster ones and the Jaws thing. Mm-hmm. Did y'all talk about the Piranha movie?
Yes, Piranha's a great movie. Right. Piranha was supposed to be a parody movie. And it
ended
up blowing up. The later movies turned into more of a parody movie. Like we talked about Piranha 3 and Piranha 3D and then Piranha 3 Double D, which is actually the fourth installment.
Really?
Yeah, terrible.
Yeah.
Terrible fucking movie. But yeah, we talked Piranha. Piranha's a great movie. Piranha's
I remember y'all talking about Anaconda in one of the previous ones. I think it was the one with Mr. Joe Denton on there. But did y'all talk about Lake Placid?
Briefly, and actually me and Melissa were talking about that.
We forgot to talk about that one.
That one's
Lake Placid is a great fucking movie.
I love that movie. Betty White's the one that feeds him and makes him grow and all that.
I think what hurt Lake Placid is the CGI was a little bit too overboard with it. It got kind of goofy, but it was a good
movie.
What
was the other one? No, like, I mean, it hurt because there were so many of those CGI, like, over-the-top monster movies at the time, and there was like Tornado or Twister and Volcano and all of, and then Armageddon. Like there were so many disaster
the day
movies
after tomorrow
that just
they all came after Jurassic Park. They all thought they could do a Jurassic Park.
But what did Lake Placid, there was another one with an alligator, right? The crocodile or something. It wasn't Anaconda. There was another, like Lake Placid was the better of the two, but there was another one.
Hmm.
Kind of one of those mirror image movies.
Oh, there was one. It was, what was it called? Oh, I know the one you're talking about.
This giant, it was actually a Nile crocodile that came over. I can't remember the name of the movie, but I know the one you're talking about.
Yeah, and so like Placid was the star-studded one, and there was another one that was actually kind of better that came out around the same time. But there was like between, because there was a mirror image of Anaconda too, wasn't there? I mean, it wasn't stupid like big killer snake, but it was like. Mm. Python or something. Right. Like it was that kind of a mirror image, sort of around the same time.
I don't know how that works in Hollywood, where ideas get leaked and you get to like Volcano and
Dante's
stuff comes out, there's something's coming out, so somebody else will say, "Hey, I'm gonna jump on that idea too," and they try to do one fast, just like Swamp Thing and Man Thing.
Yeah, well, you have competing studios. Yeah. That were because it was Twister,
the Wyatt Earp and Tombstone.
Yeah. Exactly, you know. Kevin Costner. And Tombstone's obviously the better, but
Primeval is amazing, though.
No, it's not
Tombstone, but yeah,
it's Primeval. That was it. It was because when I first saw Primeval, I didn't realize it was a crocodile movie because it sounds like it'd be some other kind of monster movie. Mm-hmm. But it was a huge Nile crocodile. Mm-hmm. But it was definitely a good movie.
And it came out around the same time.
Because
you had Armageddon and Deep Impact. Mm-hmm. And Armageddon actually has taken the top role, even though Deep Impact was better with Morgan Freeman. Mm-hmm.
Elijah Wood.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, like, nothing used Armageddon except for the sappy Michael Bay, like, American flags while they're all looking into space montages. That was just, like, almost painful. It was like, okay... Yeah, giant rock is about to hit us. You don't need to slow-mo the agony. Like, this is just voyeuristic. It sucks. It's like the little boy in the backwards or sideways baseball cap, like, leaning out the barn window over the flapping American flag looking into space, and you're just like...
You didn't get the apple pie that was...
come on, man!
Pulling off on the ledge.
Could you be any more sappy shit? Yeah. But Armageddon was fun.
Oh, if they made Armageddon today, there would definitely be a Trump flag somewhere flapping in the wind. I already know him.
Impact was a better kind of took the whole concept a little more seriously. Like, oh shit, there's a rocket or there's a rock. Sure, we gotta figure it out. Mm-hmm. No, we're into space. We're still out at sea. That's what the episode is about. I mean, we can move around. It doesn't matter.
Right.
Yeah, I think there's only so many things you can talk about with the ocean. Y'all have already covered a lot of it.
Well, there's also just all the Harry Housen movies back in the day with Sinbad.
Sinbad movies had
like some incredible sea creatures and just things that happen on the water and stuff, which he's the king of stop motion animation back in the day.
I love those pictures. Like, we were at Joe's house the other day recording the episode a few weeks ago, but those pictures of Ray Harryhausen in his studio, mm-hmm. and he's got like the Kraken, and it's like a foot and a half tall, and he's got the Medusa head that's also a foot and a half tall, right. And it's just like
Cyclops,
like all of these things that he's made, and they're all just standing like dolls on shelves. I'm like, that is like, what I wouldn't give, because, I mean, obviously that happened a long time ago, because he was, like, working in the 70s and the 80s, and 60s, 70s, 80s. But to just go in there...
Well, has that display that was traveling the museum circuit in Europe ever made it to the States?
I don't think so.
There was a display of it, all those things that were traveling, all the Harryhausen's models and stuff. That were going through a European tour. I would go to that in a heartbeat. That's my whole childhood, dude.
I wish we'd get something like that here in Houston. Also, an H.R. Giger, exhibit too. I mean, because he's got so much stuff.
Yeah.
His collection. His wife has kept. But you know what? I just thought about this. So we've been talking about ocean things, but I think we kind of take it for granted because we pretty much live. You grew up near Corpus.
Mm-hmm.
Right, you grew up in Louisiana.
Yeah,
we're all beach babies. We're all coastal kids.
Yeah,
you know, people who live in Minnesota don't give two shits about a Jaws. They can't relate. What about freshwater stuff? You know, like we brought up Lake Placid. The whole idea of the Creepshow tar monster in the water. when I watched that, and I remember the first time I went to a lake, I thought about that the whole time. I think water in general.
Well, Creature from the Black Lagoon was one.
Creature from the Black Lagoon, yeah. I mean, because when I went swimming in Canada one time, went in one of the lakes in Algonquin Island National Park, it was very scary because the water was freezing as hell. But it was beautiful. But you could, when the sun hit the water, you could see the boulders at the bottom of the lake. And it looked like it was about 10 feet down, but it was really about 40. And as I was just treading water there, I was scared. I'm in a freshwater lake, but I was still kind of scared. And I missed that. I missed that fear. Mm. I like getting scared.
Well, in high school, there was this place called Clearwater. We would skip school to go swimming at. And it was on this farmer's property it was private property, but he would let you go hang out there as long as you could hang out in his lawn chair and watch the girls in bikinis. It was a really weird situation. I'm not bullshitting you. But we would go out there in this Clearwater was a pond where they had dug out dirt for overpasses. So the middle of this fucker was like 60 feet.
Yeah.
And there were kids that had drowned out there before, and we knew that. But we would still skip school all the time. And the thing about it is, it was set up to where, you know, an excavator could drive down. So it was really fucking shallow at the very beginning. And then all of a sudden it would drop down real, real deep. And I remember a friend of mine, he damn near broke his neck diving in. Because we would literally go out there with diving boards, and we set them up on an inner tube, and somebody would park their truck on one end. Then you have the inner tube to give it a little bit of bounce. And he ended up in the mud because it was like, it was so weird. It was shallow one spot, and the other spot, it was, like I said, 60 feet deep. But yeah, it was creepy thinking that if you fall in the bottom, that's your ass.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a scare this weekend at in Braunfels, because the place we were staying, you walk down the stairs, you get in the water. And I'm 6'3", so the water's like waist deep. Take a few steps closer into the river, like towards the middle of the river, kind of comes up chest deep. But as you walk, it shallows up. So you walk and it comes up a little bit, you know. And it just kind of has these variations, and then it goes down. There's a point kind of mid-river where it's over my head. Mm-hmm. But the space between where I can stand head up and then again on the other side is only probably 6 or 8 feet. The girls are swimming in the river. The river's not that far. The other side of the river is Schlitterbahn. And somebody was like, hey, go swim across the river. So both my girls were like, yay. So both of them hit the water and start swimming. And Juliet shoots right across. Autumn makes it about 3/4 of the way, and then pops her head up, and she's like, I'm out of energy, I can't make it. And then she starts going into, like, trying to tread water, but being exhausted.
Yeah.
Luckily, I wasn't too far away, but the current was coming against where I was swimming to, so she was to my left, and I had to swim to my left in order to get to her. So I started swimming, and I'm pushing against current. And then, like, every now and then my foot would hit the ground because it's too shallow for me to actually be swimming. I should be up and walking. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to do this, and she's, like, kind of starts to float. Oh, like, I'm right there, baby. I'll get you. And I finally hit deep water and able actually to swim. And I catch her and I pull her out. I'm like, dude. Oh my God, first of all, my heart is just like,
well, yeah,
beating out of my chest. She was never in any true danger because at the very least, she would have been able to hit and touch bottom like a few feet away from where she happened to be. Mm-hmm. But it's just that, like, you need help. I'm sprung into action and then I'm hobbled in a weird way. So I'm like, I'm like, dude, if you are ever swimming and lose energy, can't make it, do not struggle. Just turn on your back. Stop fighting. Just turn on your back. Float. Float. Keep your head up and breathe.
But I mean, the water is not our natural environment.
Save your energy. I know, but that's one of those things. Like, I could just imagine her, like,
yeah,
like, like this was all in a, it wasn't a contained area, but it was all in an area in which I was never out of control. I would have been able to get her no matter what, but had I not, then my, I know, is that thunder?
It's supposed to rain tonight, tomorrow.
That's crazy because there's no monsters involved. It's just water in general.
Well, yeah.
Like you just said, it's not our first
environment. It's not our natural environment, so it's a fear of...
That's where we live because we have to have the water.
And I remember we used to go down to the Mexican Caribbean all the time in Xel-Há, which is a cenote right outside of Playa del Carmen. We would go to Xel-Há and we'd go through the caves and everything and you'd swim across a little bay. And I remember there was a bridge that you crossed to get from one side to the other. And that bridge was at the very edge where the ocean began. And when you're crossing this bridge, it's a bridge literally floating on the water. And it just, it has a little bit of slack so that it can handle the swells. And the swells, because you're right on the ocean, the swells are so bad, you actually have to jump whenever they come through. And just the thought that, you know, if I fall to the right, I'm safe. But if I fall off to the left, I'm dead. Because that's literally the ocean with these, you know, 5-6 foot swells that are coming through. I'm not going to be able to swim through that shit. And just, it's a scary feeling. Because you lose control. Because like I said, it's not the environment that you're naturally suited for.
Mm-hmm.
It can go bad quick. You know, it was compared, the whole thing going on right now with the Titan is compared to being lost in space. That's basically what it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't belong there. That's not where you're supposed to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. We can close it out.
That's a good place to spot it. Yeah.
I was going to say, you remember that movie, Enemy Mine?
Oh, yeah. That's an awesome movie. Louis Gossett Jr.
And Dennis
that
Quaid,
kind of opening scene where it's like the scene of the battle, the space battle.
Mm-hmm.
And we're used to space battles because we see Star Wars and Star Trek and everything. But these guys are floating around in like NASA space suits with their visors crushed in from pressure or blasted with... Like, that, I think, is one of those hovering, most frightening scenes in my head.
Yeah.
It's only a couple seconds long. And the movie itself is great. Go see it. But that, like you say, lost in space. But you're not lost in space like Darth Vader is. You're lost in space like Neil Armstrong is.
Yeah. Right.
He's, you know, he's in that same white suit with the big open visor and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man, and it's all skeletonized because he's been out there forever with the wind just whipping him. Like, oh.
Yeah.
Mama never knew what happened to him.
Yeah.
Just left home one day and never came back. He's millions of miles from home. If that happens in the ocean, though, the sharks will take care of it.
Oh, yeah. First, the tiger sharks come along.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that has been episode 180.
Thank you for coming back on, Andy. About time.
Appreciate you having me.
As the sky decides,
sounds like it's about to open up.
Yes, we need to be wet. You know, we do. It's been so hot.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, we're gonna get 4 days of reprieve with upper 90s instead of.
Dude, I'm down. It's been so damn hot.
Yeah, apparently that higher pressure system is supposed to move over to Arizona for a few days and come back.
Because they need it.
Yeah. It's crazy, dude.
Hi, we're Arizona. Let's get hotter.
Yeah.
All right, man. Thanks, Andy, for showing up, and we will talk again soon. As always, man, if you like the show, let us know. If you don't like the show, fuck off.
No, let us know.
I'm joking. I'm talking to you, that guy. Anyway, keep scary.
Later.
Later.